You're listening to a podcast from thisistheshow.co.uk. Welcome to This Is The Show with me, Andrew Moyer. Now, I know we've been away a little while, but we are back and hopefully we'll be a little more regular from now on. If you want to keep up with what's happening, then you can find us on Twitter at The Show Podcast or at facebook.com/thisistheshow. This week I am delighted to be joined by Babylon Dubpunk's frontman Stephen Fraser. If they sound familiar, then that's because they are the writers and performers of our theme tune. So what better way to kick off than with the Babylon Dubpunk's and This Is The Show.
If I'm going out my brain, take a trip on a bullet train. I watch the days fall like acid rain. I leave a knife in the fast lane. In the fast lane. Gotcha. Don't wanna know. This is the show. How the good birds go. Oh yeah. I wish the time watches all pass by, yeah. To pressure, watch the pain dry. I wish the life we've been all goodbye. I live a life in the fast lane. In the fast lane. Gotcha. Don't wanna know. This is the show. The good boys go. Well, let me tell you that you don't wanna know. This is the show. All the good boys go. Oh yeah.
Now by Stephen Fraser of the Babylon Dubpunks. We just heard This Is The Show, our theme tune. Tell us a little bit about that song.
Well, it's only two chords for a start. Nah, it's got my... It was actually written specifically to start a set off. We were kind of getting a set of songs together. We thought we need something really like sort of with a bit of noise and a bit of attitude. So it just occurred like that, nothing special, but it's always a set opener. Opening for any show, that's what I say.
And talking of shows, Babylon Dubpunk's back playing again, looked like for a while, might not be.
Oh yeah man, it's hard being in this band, I'll tell you. I couldn't tell you who's in the band. we turn up at gigs. We've got a hardcore feather now. Myself, guitar, vocals. We've got a bass player, so he says. And we've got this this other dude who comes in and just raps and just jams along to anything. He's amazing. He's got the most amazing voice. And before our drummer, who was Spanish, has went back to Spain. We had Pepe Pardo, great guy, by the way. So the last 2 months we've not had a drummer, so we're like turning up at gigs and basically using drummers for other bands. We've been turning up at gigs hoping somebody like would play with us, and they have, and this has happened for our last two gigs. In fact, sorry, our last gig we had Martin and Michael, who used to be in the band, back playing, like, and that's after like 2 years. So like we had a sort of rehearsal, and they've just came in and just been brilliant, and it was fantastic. Actually, it felt like the band had come back home, did a full circle with them. But it's like, it's edgy. It's like there's no personnel really. It's like sort of, it's like whoever's at the gig is playing for us these days. But it's good. We're still good. If there's any drummers out there, by the way, we're auditioning.
Other than the drummers, it sounds though quite a friendly, a cooperative scene in Edinburgh.
Definitely. It's like a social thing as well. You know, obviously the common ground is the music, but there's types of bands in Edinburgh. There's surf punk bands, garage punk bands, punk rock bands, blues, whatever. But they all, like, you know, they all respect each other's music, and I've felt that there's a lot less bitchiness between musicians at gigs than what was about maybe 10 years ago. Like, it's good going to gigs now, and like other bands actually stop over and watch you. You know, if you're on last or whatever, because people used to just go away, but now people like just that's like a respect thing. But I think it's quite a social scene.
And does that go along with the venues as well, or the particular venues that are friendly to bands?
I think that's why all the bands are sociable, like, because there's some venues like you got to get together to like sort of you know, give people sticks sometimes. There's some venues that are really crap, you know, and people have not got a clue how to run their venue. They'll put on bands, but they'll not promote the gig. They actually don't have any equipment. It's all very turn up and hope for the best sometimes. And like they charge like maybe £5 at the door, and it's like, you know, why charge money? Why not just let people in? You know, because the bands never see the money anyway. You know, so and they make money at the bar, so why charge people? Like, Kim, where's that money going to? That's probably got the promoter for, 10 fags and a bottle of whatever, you know? It's that kind of cheap thing. But there's venues in Edinburgh, such as, like, Henry's, where the people who run the venue understand the bands, because a lot of them are into bands themselves and in bands, so they know what musicians are like, and they know what gigs are like, and for me that's like the more people who promote shows and run shows who are musicians, the better, because they understand what goes on, because it's a hard slog and you don't get paid money. You know, you don't get paid for it. Like, in fact, you get put out of pocket for it, because you've got to like sort of pay for petrol or whatever. You know, it's terrible. Actually, it's terrible.
But all worth it when you get up on the stage and start playing.
All worth it. See, that's what keeps people there. Actually, the funny thing is, I was thinking about that the other day, because I've been playing a lot of music for a long time. I've been in lots of different bands, and for a wee while, there was a period of time where, like, I just got sick of going to gigs, actually turning up and playing. I just wanted to be away as quick as possible. I was actually not looking forward to going to gigs. And then I took a break off it, and then went back to it. And now I get that. It's just what you say, it's the playing. I've got that feeling to play again. I look forward to gigs. I'm loving music. You know, I think a lot of people go through that. But that's the thing that keeps everybody going.
Is that part of being in a band, though? It's usually there's one person who's got a lot of drive and you're maybe surrounded by people who aren't as keen as you or maybe want to turn down gigs more often than you.
Yeah, yeah. That is, by the way, you know, that's bang on. That's what happens. That's what happens. It's like, that's where it can be really, really frustrating. You need everybody in your band to pull together and go in this, I was going to say one direction, but let's not go there. Yeah, you need people who pull together and take your band forward together, because there's so many jobs within the band. It's like, it's not just the music. It's writing songs, it's rehearsing songs, it's communicating your songs to other members of the band. But then you get publicity, then you get, you've got to look for gigs, then you get, somebody has to do posters, artwork, then you get like, there's got to be finances involved, so we've got to try and source funding somewhere to maybe, if we want to set up a tour, you've got to find money to go on tour. You know, there's a lot of things happen. And if you have people in the band who are into the band and who really, this is what they want to do, they'll go and maybe like work for the band as well. The thing is, like, that doesn't happen really. That's the ideal world. What happens is, somebody has songs and they want to play them live, and they'll find people to play them with, and they become a sort of band. But it's like somebody has to take charge, you know, and you find that other people have other commitments here and there, so they can't focus totally on the band. So it's usually down to one person, and that's usually the person who writes the songs and communicates the music to push it all forward. And it's hard work. It's hard work for one person to do the whole shaboom. You know, like, I've stopped writing songs because I'm having to deal with getting in touch with people, you know, to organise gigs, to organise travel, to find out what times you've got to be at venues, to find out what kind of equipment you've got to take. There's lots of things like that, that just wee things that, you know, have you got a kettle lead? Oh, like, you know what I mean? Things come up, it's just, and like, I should be writing songs, you know, like, oh my creative flow goes towards getting gigs and talking to people and like keeping the band ticking over. And I get the time to write songs. When you have a band who work together, you find that you're then released time to do what you should be doing, and that's writing songs, because that's what you do. It's a hard task, but there's a love.
And has that put a delay on the long rumoured Babylon Dub Punk's album?
Oh god. yes. We've been recording this album for about 5 years. We've recorded lots of stuff that's been, you know, like, yeah, well, that'll be on the album. But that kind of stuff was recorded maybe 2 years ago, and it's outdated, and the recordings weren't really good. The problem really comes back to the drummer, him. Having a solid drummer, you can go in the studio and do your stuff and put down the drum tracks. But when you have like sort of drummers who are like sort of there for maybe 3 weeks, you can't then go, it's like you have to start again. it's all about, you know, starting again, because you've got to show whoever's coming in what to do, because like time is money and the studio time is money, so you've got to be prepared to go in the studio. And if you don't have a drummer who knows the songs, you've just got to record rubbish, really. So that's been the problem, but not for 5 years. It's like we are recording this album and it's getting recorded now. We've sourced, everything's in place actually, it's all paid for. A whole package behind the scenes, all paid for, all ready to go. The CD sleeves, the pressing of the CD, the amount of units, the distribution, it's actually paid for, which is like, you know, we've paid out money and it's all there. We need to record the album. We've recorded 2 tracks so far, and I have to say they're sounding great actually, but it's like getting the studio time and getting the band members' time to coincide with each other, you know, like, because people are like, oh, I've got to do blah blah blah, and it's like, well, when can we book the studio to get you in to do your part? It's all that's going on as well, you know, because like you can't just book the studio and hope somebody will turn up, because then you've got to pay for it, and if somebody doesn't turn up, it is a nightmare. And that, there is a benefit to having people who are in the band, because then you can say, look, you know, this is what we're doing, do it, you're in the band, you do it. But when people aren't in the band, if people aren't in the band, you can't tell them, you know, it's hard, you know, it's a tough road. The album, though, should be out by 2055. We're going for something like that anyway, 2055. And probably the technology will be out as well, where people will be able to play the album, because it's getting recorded in mega silence now. Which is, it's like a frequency even dogs can't hear. People are saying there's nothing on the album, and we're saying there's 16 tracks on that. You just can't hear it till 2055, when the technology will be there for you to actually listen to it. But that'll be £16.
Talking a bit about recording, let's talk more about playing live, and in particular Strummer Camp. Yeah. Something you're a great advocate of.
Oh, listen, Strummer Camp's fantastic, really amazing festival. I went down about 5 years ago, because I was talking to somebody online from London who was in a band called Creation Rockers, and I love Creation Rockers, amazing reggae dub band from London. And they were saying like, oh, we're playing this festival in Manchester, Strummer Camp. And I was like, all right, so I went to check it out. And I checked it out on their website. And I had a look at it and I thought, you know, I'm a huge Clash fan. Massive Clash fan. And, you know, when Joe Strummer died, I was like hoping it wouldn't be like sort of toy dolls and a marketing thing, which would, you know, like sort of buy your Strummer doll or something like that. And I had a sort of wee idea maybe this festival would be like this. But anyway, like, we went down to Manchester and I was totally knocked out. Totally amazing. I've been to a lot of festivals in my time. Tea in the Park, loads down south, you know, the V5 thing, major festivals like that. But Strummer Camp kicks them all into touch. It's the most unique thing you can ever go to. It's like you go down there and you're in this stadium, and then you camp for 3 days, and there's 2 big main stages that play eclectic and everything, like, and they have headliners, but you've got to hear lots of different kinds of music. It's like you go to one place and there's punk rock going on. You go to another place and it's reggae, dub, chilled, and then you got world music. You got a busking stage. We played with when we went down to play. We played with Speary Destiny and the Block. Well, the Blockheads they headlined it. It's like the Blockheads, you know. It's like it's the Blockheads. They're amazing. Like, and everybody just like gets on with it. Like, even them, the artists who perform are sometimes in the field with the people who attend. And for me, the people who attend that festival, you'll never meet nicer people. Not one arrest in 10 years. Not one arrest in 10 years at a punk rock festival. You know, they take their kids. It's child friendly. It's at cost price, right? The people who run it, it's a non-profit making festival. Every bit of money that they make goes into the bands for next year. It's a love. It's a pure and utter love of The Clash and Joe Strummer, and it's friends of Joe Strummer who put it on. And it's like, it's done in the correct manner. And I would say, anybody out there, go and experience Strummer Camp. I'm telling you, you want to go back. It has hit so many people. I have a friend who, he'll remain nameless, but he doesn't get out the house, right? He's kind of slightly agoraphobic, right? And will only go, right? But I managed to say, "Look, I've got your ticket for this festival. We're going down." He came, whereas last year, right? It's when we got back up the road, he was like, "When can we order the tickets for next year's festival?" All he does is, I can't wait, that'll be us. He's counting down the days, and it's like, that's the kind of effect it has on people. Check out Strummer Camp. It is an amazing festival.
And that's very much connected to your love of The Clash.
Now, oh, yeah.
I read this on Facebook and I didn't quite believe it, about when you first saw The Clash.
I actually met Joe Strummer. Well, what happened was, like, The Clash came to Edinburgh, and this was 1980, on the 16 Ton tour with Mickey Dread. Mickey Dread, man, wow. So they were touring up Scotland and that, and they played two nights at the Odeon. And so anyway, I had a ticket for Saturday night, went along to the gig, and wow, I mean, wow, amazing. Totally blew me away. The Clash were amazing. You know, got home, I couldn't sleep in that, and I was like, I have to go on Sunday. You see The Clash. I never had a ticket, and I was like a 15-year-old type school boy. I was still at school, 14-year-old. I never had any money for bus fares and that. I walked from my house, which was about 3 miles away from the venue, to the venue, and stood outside the venue, and I was like, how am I going to get a ticket to get into this gig? And I was like, trying to chat the bouncers by saying, "Oh, go and let us in, mister," and all that, and the bit they weren't having it. So anyway, decided to walk round the side of the Odeon. For no reason why, I could tell you, I just decided, I'll go round here, maybe I can dig a hole or something, you know, I don't know. But I saw these two guys, like, at this window, and they were banging, like, on this window. I was like, right, well, I'm going over there, something's happening. So it goes over, and banging away and that, and I'm like, what are you doing in that? He went, "Well, we're trying to get in to see The Clash." And I'm like, so am I. And then the next minute, the window opens, and there's Joe Strummer at the window, right? And I was like, and they're like, "It's Joe Strummer," like. And he's like, come in, right? And he lifts us up into the Odeon, and we're in The Clash dressing room. And I'm like, it's The Clash. It's like The Clash. This is in my head, like, but it was too cool. They're my heroes, but I'm just going to play it cool. But anyway, I was like, wow. The funny thing is, when he opened the window and we climbed in, there was all these cameras, like, flashing. Anne Nightingale, she was sitting and interviewing them. And then Mickey Dread was standing up at the back with a big duffel coat on, right? Because he was absolutely freezing, man. He was really funny, actually. And the rest of the band are sitting there, Topper Head and Paul. Mick Jones asked Mick Jones, he had a can of beer, right? And I was like, could I have a swig of your beer? And he told me, "F-." In a nice way, like, Ken. And I was like, you're my hero, man. But amazing. They all signed. I had a, at the time, it was Hibs Yellow away top. Bukta, right? They signed my top, like my Hibs top, like, I was like, wow. We were there for about an hour. They were just brilliant. They just were talking to us, and they were like, what do you do? And I was like, I'm still at school and that, but I want to be in a band. And Joe Strummer says these, and I'm like, Joe Strummer's talking to me. You know, and he was like, what you should do is write some songs, get in a band and do it. And that was it, man. That was it. It's like, that was it. That was me, right? So they were going, they were about sort of 10 minutes before they go on stage and that. They were like, well, you'll have to go now. They got the roadie to take us up to a place that we could watch the gig. The entire, we got to walk across the stage at the Odeon as well. And it was amazing because, like, the whole place was packed, right? And we gets to walk across the stage. And I was like, wow, man, it's amazing. It was amazing. They were just, like, just usual guys who were like, what's happening? You know, there were Nairs and Graces, I'll tell you. They were just usual guys. And I was like, when I came away for that gig that night, and by the way, they played the most fantastic set that night. Amazing live, just full of energy. They came rushing onto the stage, right, and they just exploded. And it was like 100% right to the end. When I left that gig, right, I went home. My mum and dad was like, I met the Clash in that the night. Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. And then it was on TV the next thing in day on Nationwide, the show. But you didn't have video and stuff like that then. So, like, if you missed it, that was it. So I didn't even know anything like that had happened. But, like, there, apparently, I goes to school, and I'm going into school, and one of my teachers is like, Fraser! I'm like, aye. I saw you on TV last night. I was like, what? About climbing in a window. I was like, what? Yeah, you were at some rock concert or something. Like, I saw you on TV last night on Nationwide. I was like, what? All my pals were telling me this, and I missed it, right? And I was like, what? And I couldn't believe it. They were like, yeah, it freeze frame on you as you were coming in through the window, and there's Joe Strummer. I was like, no. 30 years later, after this event, right, watching the TV, and Westway to the World comes on, and I'm like, oh, Westway to the World, like, it was like, sort of, I think it was BBC Two, so I'm just watching it, and then it's like, there it is, like, me as a 14 year old going through this window, and I was like, wow, God, it was bizarre. And ever since, it's been edited onto other videos as well, at the Clash sort of did. Really a life changing moment, totally. As in, as soon as I'd left that gig, I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to get in a band, and I wanted to play music, and I didn't care what I did in music. I just wanted to do that.
And how long from then was it until you formed your first band?
About 2 days.
Nice.
I couldn't even play a guitar or anything, and we had a gig. We were called the Rotten Vegetables, right? I didn't even know what a guitar looked like, to be honest, right? I got involved with this art centre place in Cream Miller, who were putting on gigs, and it was the time of punk and people were in bands and that. After that gig, and after I went to school and that, like, and I thought, you know, my career, I know what my career is, like, I'm going to be in a band. Me and my mates were like, we should get a band together, and like, I was like, well, come on, I know this place we can go, and they give you guitars, and you can, they've got drums, and you can play. So we all went into this place in New Craig Hall, and they had all this set out, and so we just plugged in and just started making a racket, right? And it was just literally a racket. And this guy who ran the place says, we've got this gig tomorrow, you just want to play in that? And we're like, yeah, no problem, we'll play in that. It was terrible. And that was it. That was it. You know, just learn as you go. Taught myself, basically, how to play chords and stuff. And then got into songwriting. It was a love, total love, you know, because if you want to do something and you really love doing something, you'll do it. I really, really, really wanted to learn the guitar. I sat for hours looking at people, or like Top of the Pops, looking at guitarist shapes, what they did, and I sat for hours just trying to play a chord, just one chord, you know, but hold it down and get. I sat for hours till my hands were sore, and then the next digging day I would put 2 hours in because I really wanted to play. And then when I heard my sort of first chord that I could play, and then the second one, and I was like, I could do this. And I just went for it and just practiced, and I practiced and I practiced, and then people like sort of says, there's a book that it shows you chord shapes and that. I mean, like, can you get books? And I didn't know that there were books that showed you chord shapes and that, like Bert Weedon, Learn in a Day. See, when I got the Bert Weedon book, I was like Jimi Hendrix. I believe if you really, really love something, you'll do it, because that's what you've got to do, okay? And you'll put the hours in and stuff, like.
I read that you were doing on Facebook Tales from the Tower Block, a lot of stories from your life. Was that a catharsis? Was that something to...
That's totally true and stuff, like... The Tales from the Tower Block is a book. Not a lot of people know this, right, but I've been writing a book for 6 years now. I've been collecting a lot of information. For gigs, I kept a diary. You know, like, just situations that happen, like, when you turn up at gigs. There's lots of moments that, you know, that pass and never get documented. But so what I did was I was talking to people and they were telling me their experiences as well. So I was jotting down sort of just interesting lines and whatever, and I've been collecting all this information. This has got to be a book. It's about like a band who get together by accident, who see this ad in the NME, and this is set back in 1977. Somebody's actually was calling another number, know that number, get put onto it, but ends up the bass player in the band. So they get this band together, and they don't know each other, and that. I don't want to give too much away, but it's got something to do with time travel. But within that whole thing of this band forming and playing stuff and that, they're like band names, like what we call ourselves, and they're like, what about the Beatles? And they're like, the Beatles, that's good, we'll call ourselves the Beatles, right? And they're like, they're playing in that, and like somebody says, so what's the name of your band and that, and they're like, well, we're the Beatles, and they're like, that's been done in that, and they're like, what, you're kidding, like this kind of thing, you know. It's all like, alright, we'll have to call us, what about the Ramones? I like that, the Ramones, nobody will have called themselves the Ramones, blah blah blah. So anyway, like, they become famous and they release loads of albums and stuff, and within the whole book there's interviews of the personnel who have left. You know, the guitarist does the guitarist thing and disappears, you know, nobody's seen him and stuff, you know, and this is 3 years, has anybody seen him? And that, like, and he basically works down the road and that, and he's like there every day and that, but they make out that he's the mysterious guitarist and that. But there's interviews cut in as well, and there's real live CDs. Well, it's a real live band actually, and it's like it's going to be cut in with stories for gigs, local gigs with real people. It's like a mishmash of stuff. There's so much stuff that it's going to take a long time to edit it. It's like I've lived an experience. And I've based this book on an experience around what I've had, you know, like gigs, whatever, people, and wee situations, you know, about like drummers, wee situations about like how did you get your name, like wee sort of just all little situations that occur. But it's getting it. I'm finding it difficult to actually finish it because I keep collecting more, like, information and stuff. And the Tales of the Tower Block is like my life when I was a kid, when I grew up. And that is, it's all short stories, but that's got to be intertwined through it. Being a punk rocker in the 70s, basically what it was like to live, the time of your life, you know, your background. It's like that's all got to be intertwined into it. But I'm finding it really hard to actually say that's... stop there, let's edit this thing. but I've got a lot of material on a lot of people. By the way, I know who you are, and I'm going to put you in this book, and I'm going to name yous, and I don't care what you think or who you get or any kind of legal thing. I'm just going to do it. I'll do it when I'm maybe really ill or something and I've got to pawn my clogs and then sue me. But it's going out. There will be a book.
That sounds like a fantastic project. So that's coming up in the future. What's next for the Babylon Dub Punks?
Next up is actually, there's a, like, we're playing at the Banshee Labyrinth. It's Go Local, which is it's a stalls, local stalls and local bands are getting together, so people can come in and maybe check out, like, you know, like arts and crafts stalls, stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's a gig. It's like what we do. We're playing gigs. We got offered this gig, so that's up. I think we're probably playing Strummer Camp this time round as well. And there's a festival in Nottingham called Deerstalk. We're kind of on the bench for that one. I mean, it's what's it just happens daily. I don't know what's got to be tomorrow. That, you know, like somebody could say, we just play this, this is what happens. It's like, I used to be able to book lots of gigs in advance, and we'd have a timetable, and it would be like, right, for March, we're playing 4 gigs in March. Now, it's kind of, it's back to the drummer thing. Can you book gigs, you know, until you have a, so like, it's on a day-to-day basis, like, so the band exists, really.
So we'd like to finish with one of your songs. What one would you like to pick out?
Oh God, that's a good question, man. That is a good question. Scared of the Machine, because it's Liz from Seafield Foxes' favourite song ever, and we've never played it for a long, long time. And Liz got hit with a bus recently. I don't know if you know, but she's on the road to recovery. But that's her favourite song, and so for that, this is for Liz, and it's Scared of the Machine. Get better soon.
Man is making stars. Man is making stars. Man is making stars. Man is making stars. Making stars explode, 'cause he needs to know where we came from and where we're gonna go. Don't you realize what you have done? You crossed the line to cuss to the point of no return. Now this kingdom come. Scared of the machine, I'm scared of the machine. Scared of the machine. Scared of the machine, I'm scared of the machine. Scared of the machine. You'll never find paradise at the speed of light. New world created by God's in the land. Man is making stars. This imploding sun is the start of the end of everything. Everyone, scared of the machine. Scared of the machine. I'm scared of the machine. The machine, you never find paradise at the speed of light. Where worlds collide, you cannot find.
This is the show.